Hello, I'm Masuko Panyane, and welcome to Big Little Secrets, an independent media weekly podcast where I get very nosy with movers and shakers in the local entertainment industry about the stuff they hang on their walls, hide in their drawers, and of course, how they get their wows. Join us every week as celebrities from the South African music, television, arts, and film industries let us in on their big little secrets. Who knows what they'll reveal? Big Little Secrets. This week on Big Little Secrets, we're joined by King Monarch Lady Zama.
That's the coolest thing ever.
Which one do you like most, King or Monarch?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah.
You know, let me be honest. When I was listening to you explain the title last week, Wednesday? I think so.
Yeah.
Hey man, I thought this is very academic. What did you say about the butterfly again?
No, just basically the butterfly itself, when it's a caterpillar, it eats milkweed and therefore it becomes poisonous. Mm. But that milkweed is poisonous to other animals, but not it. Mm. When it goes into the chrysalis, it's still poisonous. Mm-hmm. When it emerges, it's poisonous, but it's beautiful. Yeah.
How did you end up with the point that this is what I'm going to call my second offering?
We were playing around with so many ideas. Mm. Like, we threw around ideas on royalty, different names. You can imagine the Google searches that we did, different languages. And we used to joke. Like, my engineer used to say, yeah, we are the monarchy, you know? It was just a joke. And then one day when we were in Cape Town early this year, I was like, wait, but what if we didn't call it monarchy? What if we just said monarch? Mm. So we went into, because we are researchers, my entire team and I, when we say we're going to do something, we look into how it affects, how would it sit in the industry, what has anyone ever named something like this before? Mm. So we then did an entire search for I think a month before we settled on the name and said, yes, we are absolutely sure that this is the name of the album.
And this is going to work.
Yes, it's going to work. It allowed, one of the things I loved about the name, it allowed the music to be expansive. You know, it did not limit it.
If you have a specific title, then it's going to try and wrap, the music is going to somehow try and revolve around that. And
yes.
It's a weird little...
It's an entire beast on its own. Mm. Yeah, it's living.
So we do this quite often on this podcast and we must change these very bad habits. We started the conversation backwards. Let's start the conversation in the beginning.
Okay.
When you were 10 years old. What was Yami like? Because Yami was not Lady Zama.
No.
Yami was Yami.
When I was 10 years old, I was super obsessed with my little brother. Super obsessed with him. He was so tiny.
He's your mama.
He was the cutest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. So I would always babysit him. I was intent on being a ballerina at some point in my life.
Really?
And I loved riding bikes, skateboarding, climbing trees. I was a tomboy.
Just to off-ramp a bit. The idea of being a ballerina, had you seen black ballerinas before?
No. Mm. I hadn't, to be fair. Looking back at that time, I'd never seen a black ballerina.
And so when you were creating that idea in your young mind, what was that going to look like?
We were not taught in our family to see color. Uh-huh. We were really never told that this is black and white. Uh-huh. My parents are very Pan-African, but also they're global citizens. Uh-huh. You know, so they believe in the incorporation of the human race within each other's cultures. Uh-huh. You understand? Uh-huh. So having had that background, being in a dual medium school, I just knew that whatever anyone else can do, there's a song we used to sing, anything you can do, I can do better. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just knew that if that was something I liked, color was never a thought. It was, mm-hmm. Can I do it? And that was it.
How has this sort of shaped who you've become now as an adult, as a professional, as an artist?
I'm fearless in terms of wanting. You know, obviously the doing is a whole different ball game, but when I set my sight on something, I do not limit myself based on my skin color or my gender or my body weight or my abilities or disabilities. Mm. To me, I can achieve anything I want to, you know. So having had that mentality, when I see a challenge, I see an opportunity most of the time. Mm-hmm. There are challenges that we're like, that we know that.
Yeah, that's a bit difficult.
That's not us. But there are situations all the time where I'm like, this is difficult, then because it's difficult, I'll work at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm enticed by difficulty a lot. Yeah.
How has this now merged into the music? So this idea of limitlessness and having no boundaries, then what does this then mean when you create music?
Dance music, and let's start there. House music. I did not listen to any house music. I did not like the genre. Up until 2011, I was introduced to it. And I still never understood it. I think even last year, I was still asking, what is a broken beat, guys? You know, like it's still a new thing for me.
Okay.
You know, the urban sound, because I grew up listening to 5FM. I grew up listening to Jacaranda, Pulpit. Mm-hmm. You know, I did not really have a lot of exposure on every single platform. So now, having found this and coming from a gospel background, it was like, how do I turn something that my parents perceive as colloquial type vibe music, where it's the general public, people who are classified as just out there doing whatever the hell they want to do, how do I turn this into something that I can then prove to the people that I grew up around that it is good? You know, it's not just about being funny, and it's not just about being careless, so to speak. You know, you don't have to be a person that's out there partying and drinking all weekend just in order for you to fit into that thing. I don't have to undress. You know, I want to prove that this is possible. And that's exactly what I did. I went into this knowing fully well that I wanted to open up the dance sphere. You know, it was a genre I was not accustomed to, and the lifestyle was not something I agreed with. So I wanted to create something that was more
trailblazing. Then, for lack of a better descriptor, is a challenge, especially when you're coming into something that people will resist.
Yes.
Did you receive some of that initial pushback?
All the time. I mean, pushback is the almost definition of the world. You know, they will not like, no one likes inventors. Come on, let's be honest about it. Because inventing something means change. And people don't like change. So they want to stay in their comfort zones, even though they're bored in their comfort zones.
True.
You know, so I had a lot of that. I still do. A lot of people still question the type of music I make. People want to define it. They want to say, this is what it is, this is what it's not. And it's really not that way. Like, people like saying these days, like, Ladies and Wild makes music for main chicks. Like, that's not true. I mean, I have not been in a relationship that's proper in years. So how do I make music for main chicks? You know? Yeah.
Your lyricism.
Yeah.
I heard somewhere that you used to be Afro-J.
Yeah.
Is there a connection then between now hip-hop and how you write your music?
Hip-hop introduced me to a world of description, being able to describe. And from hip-hop, I then moved into poetry, and then I went into studying poetry. So hip-hop has really been a solid foundation of what I am. And being, coming from that background and making dance music, most hip-hop people don't even like dance music. You know, so it's kind of like a challenging thing. I remember the first time I delved into this, the people that I was around, they were like, she's sold out, she's no longer like us. People actually would go as far as saying, I'm no longer woke. And it's like, wow, guys, so music makes you woke? I didn't know that.
Well, I suppose it's that conversation of everything being political. So whether it's music, it's clothing, it's how everything is political. So I suppose that's where the wokeness thing comes.
But politics are prevalent in every single system and society.
That's the thing.
You just have to find it.
So are you saying then that some of that wokeness that you were alleged to have lost has translated into dance?
Everything that I am, I don't define myself by being woke or not woke. I think I am one of the most socially conscious people around the people that I've met. Because a lot of people like to pretend to be socially conscious.
Yes.
But when you start asking them things about, like, the environment, are they aware of their impact on environment? Are they aware of how much gas they're using? Are they aware of the electricity usage? Are they aware that certain products, you know, are tested on animals and those kind of things. So if you're gonna tell me about being woke, you best come with your A game, because I could probably outwoke most people.
Yeah. Another thing that we have learned about you is that you are intensely private.
Yes, no, I am.
Why? Because one would argue you're a public figure, so a certain portion of your life is public.
It is public. A certain portion that's public is public.
Why is the other portion not so public?
It's not my nature, to be fair. Mm-hmm. It really isn't. It has been hard to share. I've had to learn why I need to share.
Mm.
I've had to learn how my fans connect with me more because I share more. So even with this album, it was an experiment. Like, okay, maybe let me be more out there.
Mm.
Maybe let me show them that I'm not some unicorn that just loves love. Let me show them that I've been through a lot too.
Mm.
You know, maybe then they'll relate a little bit better to me, because they love the music, but there's almost like a, wow, she's so, even guys I've dated, oh my Lord. It's a situation where they're so attracted to this unicorn that is happy. And then when they find the person who's behind now serious and focused, and they're like, this is not what I signed up for. You know, so I'm very private about everything. My mom will only know about what's happening in my personal life when she absolutely has to.
Mm.
So why must I tell now people I don't know?
Why must you tell now the thousands of people that...
Yeah. The only time you will see me come out of my shell is when it's absolutely necessary to protect who I am and my integrity.
Have you felt like being an artist, a star, has forced you to sometimes come out and say, hold up, we've had a lot of this nonsense, let me clear some things up?
I want to clear a lot of things up most of the time, but that you have to hold back. But yes, being Lady Zamara has at times forced that out of me.
How do you handle it?
My mom always says, pick your battles. So I pick my battles.
Mm.
I just pick what is necessary, and I look to the long term. How does it affect me? How does it affect my fans? How does it affect the music more than anything? And if it affects it badly, most likely I won't do it.
I ask this because, look, I and this is a small tidbit about me that's not supposed to appear, but anyway, I was diagnosed with being depressed.
Yes.
So I know what my triggers are.
Yes.
And I read in a conversation somewhere that you have been mildly anxious over the last 8 months.
Yes, I've been diagnosed with mild anxiety.
So what I ask is that how do you filter all the things that may potentially trigger you? I mean, to us, it may just be a conversation about Lady Zamara's summer dress. To us, it may just be a conversation of, oh my God, she broke up with that guy who's a singer. How do you balance that this is a trigger and I need to step back and I need to protect my mental health now?
I go see a therapist when I absolutely need to. Mm-hmm. When I feel like I'm spiraling, mm-hmm. I see a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to the people that sometimes, you know, what people don't know about me, and my fans know this, is that sometimes instead of blocking a fan,
mm-hmm.
I inbox them and I explain that what you've said is unacceptable.
Wow.
And then they will then say sorry and retract. It's happened so many times, I cannot even count it. So I started to understand that sometimes they're really just saying these things to get a rise out of you. So when you know it for what it is, you know, then you just pull back. But people who are not my fans, if I click on your profile and you do not follow me, you blocked immediately.
Bye-bye.
Because you do not have a place or a say, because you don't even understand me. But for the fans that follow me, they see the day-to-day. And so when I approach them, they know from what perspective or mentality I'm approaching this issue. So they will usually say, I'm sorry. And most of them delete their comments, you know. And I try to be as personal with my fans as possible. I share a lot of myself. I share how I feel. I share what my experiences are. I share my emotions with them, you know, so that they understand I'm human. I remember when my acne started. I was tempted to just, you know, close it off. But I was like, look, acne happens to everybody. And I'm not going to hide and pretend now every day I'm in makeup vibes. No.
And especially if that's not who you are.
Exactly.
I can't stand makeup, for instance.
Yeah. So I went out without my makeup, with my acne showing. I would talk about my acne. I would tell my fans, this is how far I've come.
Mm.
This is the treatment I'm getting.
Mm.
Guys, if you've got acne, this is how it's affecting me. It's making me feel self-conscious. My self-esteem is like, you know. So there's a lot of personal stuff that I've had to share, because they need to also be educated that people who are in the public eye have feelings. We don't want a situation where I commit suicide because of some mindless person who says something so stupid, who's living somewhere at the, you know, cusp of the, I don't know where they would be living, because if I say a word, it'll be a situation of, oh, she said, no. I'm just saying, like, I do not want to find myself reacting to someone who is not even intending to hurt me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Has that worked? Because now I'm thinking, perhaps then that's how we create a safer social media presence. We start engaging with each other the way we would if we're bumped into you,
for instance. No, it works. Is it working? It works. It works because there's a deeper level of respect that is earned as a person. Mm-hmm. There's a deeper level of almost adoration, because if your star is coming out to you and saying, yeah, it's not perfect out here,
mm-hmm.
you, as a person sitting, struggling with your own issues, you feel more confident to deal with them as well, because you don't feel alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with depression and anxiety is that you often feel like you're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that no one understands you.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, they always say get support groups. And being an artist who's in the public eye this much, why don't I make my fans my support group? Why don't I create my own virtual helping, you know, let's help each other society? Yeah.
The almost, what do I even call it? Like, the huge success of Ladies of Kingsmouth, rather.
Yeah.
What has that taught you about the business of music?
Ooh, there's the business, right?
The business of music.
It's, how do I put this? The music will always speak louder than anything else.
Mm.
You cannot allow everything else to overshadow the music.
Mm.
There was a dispute I had with a producer,
mm.
and it was one of my first ones.
Mm.
And it was, oh, you know, people are like, oh, you'll never make another song like that. You know, these are the comments that are coming from social media. Like, there's no way she can top this. This was before Kingsmouth dropped,
mm.
you know. There's no way. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, there might never be a way for me to top this. Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
So I'm having this fight with this producer because I want my percentages to be right so that mm. I can cash in. Because at the end of the day, we do have to make money to pay bills.
A living.
And my publisher said to me, he sat me down, closed the door, and he said, you want to think about what you're going to do next, because you need to decide what's more important. Is it the music, or is it all the rubbish that comes with the music?
Hmm.
If you want to fight the rubbish that comes with the music, understand that you will get drained, you're creative, your mind will be stuck here, you will not be able to create.
Hmm.
Or you can let this go, allow it to sort itself out, focus on the music, and allow whatever it is that person tried to take from you, recreate it, make it something better, and you will. And he said to me, you will surpass that song. You will make a song that was bigger. And there came my baby, Love is Blind, and then Collide, which just...
Collide is a really nice song.
Yeah, it's one of those weird successes that I did not think anyone would really like it, but I was passionate about it.
Why did you not think everyone would love it so much?
Because it's really a definition of who I am. Like, if you look at music, that's me. I'm quirky. I'm odd. I take risks. I don't like patterns that recur and occur everywhere. I'm not, it's like, you can't confine me. And Collide is a song that you cannot define nor confine from the storyline, the perspectives in which
mm-hmm.
I speak,
mm-hmm.
you know. How I see the world, that's really who I am. And that's why even the music video was so fun, because that is an embodiment of who I am.
Now that you have started this other journey, and I heard a figure like 900 songs, guys. Woo! We're still coming to that one, but we haven't finished this side that I need to finish first. How has your fashion sense and your sense of self recovered from the dragging on social media? Guys, there was a period of time where every day we'd walk in and you'd find, I shit you not, so many tweets and so many somethings about Lady Zamar's outfit, and you're thinking, what the hell is going on? Why are we not talking about anything else? Why are we talking about this lady's clothes?
Ayo. I enjoyed those clothes.
Really?
I did. Not the comments.
Yeah.
I didn't care much for the comments. The clothes for me were something that I found different.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yo, I get to rock up in some big old orange tulle thing, you know?
Mm.
I get to come wearing something that looks like it's got shoulder pads, but it connects somehow.
Mm.
Clothing is a form of expression.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it was an unsuccessful form of expression for my fans. But it's not something that I ever regret.
Really?
No, I don't.
Still going to take those risks?
I do take risks, mm. but that was a time for that kind of risk. And I enjoyed it. And when it was over, there was a little sadness because I was like, why don't these people understand?
Mm.
You know? But my mom put it out for me and she's like, look, they admire you. And they just want you to dress like a queen because that's how they perceive you. So try to accommodate them, you know? And I didn't understand because I also, for the longest time, I still don't. I don't get the fuss. I don't get the whole thing. I'm always surprised, like, you guys think I'm important? Oh my gosh. You know,
like, that you can't walk around with sweats for more than 2 weeks, right? Because we're going to start asking questions that, why is she wearing sweatpants again?
Exactly. And it's one of those things. I've come to appreciate it. I've come to take the criticism and internalize it and consider it. I've changed stylists so many times.
Mm.
I'm trying to figure out who I am in clothing as well.
Mm.
I grew up as a nerd, yo. So clothes is not really like the biggest, you know, obstacle that I need to overcome.
Mm.
I feel like as long as I make great music and I keep writing and I keep pushing boundaries, we'll figure out the style, you know.
Do you have fashion icons? People you look to and think,
yeah, I do. Rihanna. Like,
yes.
I admire how she can wear any old thing. And trust me, sometimes it's terrible outfits. But somehow, people don't crucify her for that.
Yes.
Somehow, if she wears it, it's great. We wear it, it's
know.
Like...
It's like a bad girl Riri thing. Which is like, okay, I wouldn't wear that, but sure, Kim.
Yeah, that's the thing that's unfair. That's like sure, high key unfair. And also, Beyonce, especially for stage performance.
Ah.
I think there's no one who can critique my stage wear. It's the street stuff and the awards and yes. But when it comes to the stage, Beyonce is like a true icon for me and Lady Gaga.
Mm.
I loved how they took so many risks, but they kept this form of, I'm not a sex symbol.
Mm.
I can show you my body, but I'm not a sex symbol.
Mm.
And we can never really attribute sex symbolism to Gaga or Beyonce.
Mm-mm.
You know, but it's
more of a sensuality than a sex symbol.
Exactly.
Thing.
So it shows their femininity more than anything else.
Mm.
As opposed to Rihanna could wear the exact same outfit and it's somehow sexy and it's about having sex with her or people seeing her as a sex symbol.
Mm.
I don't know what little boys do to Rihanna's pictures. My gosh. It's scary to think about.
Yeah, no.
It's also how Nicki Minaj, in my opinion, is not a sex symbol. You know?
How did you decide that?
I don't see her as selling sex. I see her as selling the female form, celebrating it. But I don't see her as, oh, because I got a vagina and big boobs, and therefore I'm going to, you guys must buy
actually,
my...
Actually, I don't think about it. No. Because
in
my mind, you'd have the same conversation about, say, Nicki Minaj that you'd have about a Zodo Abantu.
Yeah.
People who have taken what patriarchy perceives to be their sort of...
tools that they play
and
around
they've
with.
Basically taken it back and said, actually, no, it's mine, I will do with it.
Exactly. Anaconda changed the way we perceived women with big butts.
Mm.
Do you understand? It was there was a point where I was ashamed of my bum. I was like, oh, why does this thing always protrude?
Mm.
You know, and I'd always walk a certain way so that it doesn't look as big.
Did you not look weird trying to walk?
Yeah.
Can
but you're not thinking about it. All you're thinking about is when I pass that mirror, I don't want to see that thing coming at the back of me now as well. So when Anaconda came out, it's like, wow, it's cool. And now women are wearing looser clothes in the on the bum area.
Mm.
And we are more comfortable with showing it.
Mm.
You know? So I don't see her as a sex symbol. She's powerful.
Okay. I think now I'm ready to delve into Monarch.
Okay.
900? Really?
Yeah. I wrote 900 in 2 years.
In 2 years.
I wrote 900
so
songs.
So what does that get down to? How many songs a day?
Sometimes it's no song a day.
Okay.
Sometimes it's 3-4 songs a day.
Okay.
Sometimes it's one song every 2 weeks. It happens.
And I hear that you had a bit of a mental sort of evolution as well. Where
yes.
In the beginning, there were more sad songs and they became lighter.
Yes.
What happened to all the sad songs?
Some of them, I rewrote them. Dangerous Love is one of those where I took this very sad experience and I decided to create almost sarcasm in it. And it's like a question, like, so it's like, if you really think about Dangerous Love, it's like, really, like, are you really asking me to do these things? Like, does it make sense to you?
No,
so have you heard it?
I have heard it.
And haven't heard the almost like cynicism.
It sounded very cynical, almost like a type of song.
Yes.
Like, if I could express it, literally, it's the, I see you.
So, I get, so it's baby, I need to be calm, right? Maybe my heart shouldn't beat. And maybe I shouldn't feel blood rush, aches on my body, my veins strain. Told me I need to be calm, right? You know, so it's
like a,
it's like, yeah, like, what is this? So, I took a lot of those songs and I created versions of them that would then almost add to the experience of loving, question love itself, question how strong your commitment is, and just create this thing where you now start to explain love from a holistic point of view. Because the truth of the matter is that my depression came from being in love with someone I should not have been in love with, you know?
Also, I just want to ask you there, how do you define somebody you should not be? Because I don't think for any of us, we know how to define that. You often find in the middle of the thing that, like, I shouldn't have been with this one, hey? This
yeah, but usually that's because they've done something wrong.
Ah.
The first signs that I would tell anyone, I'm not a psychologist,
sure.
I've not
this
studied
is just
it, it's just my personal experiences, is once a person no longer makes you smile, you know, a person creates an uneasiness in your soul, and it's not easy to be with this person. You gotta try so hard, you gotta put in so much effort, you know, and they do nothing. That's when you know it's not the one, you know. No matter how in love you are with this person, just take stock of your emotions, take stock of how they make you feel, take stock of, can you be quiet with this person by just yourself, can you just chill, you know. And if you come up with negatives all the way,
and your checklist just keeps going that way,
just walk away from, no matter how, it's painful to walk away from someone you love. Is painful.
It's very rough.
Yeah.
The album has collabs with Tellaman and Rhapsody.
Yes.
Why these two?
Tellaman is a Pan-African young artist who has successfully, like, I keep on looking at, how did this guy do it? He has reinvented himself so many times.
Yes.
And without us being aware of it.
Less
he didn't announce it. Say, oh, now I'm...
Now I am calling myself.
Exactly. So I love how he has remained consistent in the quality of his music, and how with this God Decides album, he just came out, you know. And I love that. So that transformation, and it spoke to what I wanted.
Uh-huh.
It spoke to the type of person that I'm becoming and I've become. You know, he embodied that from a male perspective. Because
okay.
A lot of men are also very afraid of their feelings.
Yeah.
So having Tellaman come here and he's telling a man that this is how you shouldn't be treating a woman, treat the woman like this. You know, I found that admirable. Rhapsody, not many people can make my hair stand, you know, give me goosebumps by speaking. I mostly like feel like, yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, so she did this thing where she performed on a BET stage, and I was like, who is this? And I started researching. I'm like, wow, she's deep, yo. And suddenly I was like, yo, Rhapsody, you're amazing. And she was like, oh, thank you very much. I love your work too. I was like, whoa, you love my work. And it was just like,
you have these what moments a lot. Like, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah, so having that, I was like, so would you consider? And she was like, yeah, sure. We exchanged numbers. Mm. We started speaking. It was difficult for her because she was busy.
Mm-hmm.
I think she had never really been told what to do on a track before.
Oh, wow.
So I told her, like, this is the theme. Mm. This is the narrative.
Speak to that.
This is what you stick to. No, nothing, no cussing, no, just that. And that's what she did. And she went back to the second time. Again, it was another situation where I was like, brace yourself. She might say no. She might pull out. I need you to do this and fix that. And just kind of finish what you started there and there. And she sent it. And I was shocked, humbled beyond words.
You sound perfectionist. Is that fair?
I am.
How many times does something have to be done before it's perfect? Well, by the way, perfect does not exist.
No, I actually believe perfect exists.
Really?
But within imperfections.
Ah.
Yes. Okay. So, until it's perfect.
Which song on the album did you say, this song is not perfect? This song is not perfect. And kept
all of them.
Really?
The most was This Is Love.
Why? Interesting that that's the first song you introduced us to.
Yes, because I was very proud.
What was wrong with it? That's why I think what I'm wanting to find
everything.
Out.
Everything.
Really?
I re-recorded it like twice. So there were three different recordings.
Wow.
You know? And this is coming from another era where I had written it on another beat.
Mm.
Phew! The vocals at some point were too loud. You know, too much force.
Mm.
And then at some point they were just too soft. And for me it's about emotions. I need to translate
what
I'm feeling into these words that are already words that you understand.
Mm.
But you need to get the feeling. I had to go into studio again and again and I almost gave up on it. Almost.
What was the change? What was the aha moment?
We were in the publishing studio because there are different studios for different things. So in the studio where you got to listen to the song from a very open, in an open space where there's no, like there's all these effects are kind of like muted and you just listen to the raw song. And I walked out of the studio and I was like, guys, the song is perfect, but there's something missing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, but what? We can't hear it. I was like, nah, there's something. So I walked in and out. I stood at a distance. And then I don't know who said something. Somebody talked about something. And I was like, that's it. The tempo is wrong. That's it. The tempo was wrong.
Mm.
You know? Because we increased and decreased volumes of things. And still wasn't working.
Mm.
And I was like, what's the BPM? They told me. I was like, push it up. So we pushed it up in different ways. They sent us back because one of the producers lives in America. So we couldn't just, you know, do it on our own. So one is in Cape Town, one's in America. And so we pushed it up, put down some things, put it at different tempos. And I was like, let's put on a very interesting tempo.
Mm.
So we put it in the middle of tempos. And that's when
I think that's why you could have performed it as you did at your birthday / album launch. And
yes.
It would equally sound fine.
Yes.
Because if I'm honest, that's the version I wanted on the album.
Seriously?
Very calm, stripped down. That's the version. But okay, it's a dance album.
Okay, yes, that's why we gave you guys two versions.
Just like this one. No, that's the one that I want on the album. That's the one.
Yeah, so it's in the middle of tempos. And if you are not... I think DJs might have a hard time playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was intentional. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe there should be something about everything that you do that kind of... I hate that word, discombobulates.
Deliberate.
You know?
Deliberate. There must be a deliberateness if you're going to play that song.
Yes, and you must feel like there's pressure to play it.
Writing credits for Moonchild, Saneli, and Msaki. What songs are these?
Moonchild, Saneli, it's Fat Girl.
I had a feeling it would be Fat Girl.
Yeah, she's so good at it.
Ah.
So there's the third verse. Thank you, Waves. And you coming? I just came.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I wrote my version of the more less vulgar version. And then she came and put her very interesting spices on that. And then when she was done, I went and edited it a little bit better. And then I was happy now. Like, okay, this is it. And then Msaki on Freedom, it was too big of a song for me to... There are times where even your own art is just like...
It's overwhelming.
Yeah. So with Freedom, I was like, I don't think I can pull this off on my own. You know? It means too much.
Mm.
So on the chorus, the pre-chorus, Msaki and I sat, and it was, I think, 2 weeks of trying to figure out what melody would work on the beat. And we already had a melody, but we needed to perfect it. So we sang it on another beat first, and then we put it on this beat, which had the same BPMs. And we then went into studio a couple of days later, and then it was okay, this is what I've come up with. And it's like, no, I don't like that word. Let's take out that. Let's put another word. So we basically had this tug of war of what would be the best way, you know, to express this.
This is another thing that I think Monarch does very well. It introduces us to the more technical side of you, where you have to actually, you literally have to ignore the beat, which is what I've been doing for most of the morning. I had to ignore the beat and pretend it's not there. So I can hear the play on the words and the meanings and the dualities of all of it.
Yes.
Were you not afraid that people would say this is too much?
Oh yeah, that was like the biggest fear. But where else can I go? There's that question that I always have, like, if I don't do this, do I want to go back and create another album at King Zamar? Do I have the energy to recreate something I created with that much energy in 2016? How can I take, I've grown too much as a person to recreate King Zamar again. When I was King Zamar, I had not yet been through these experiences. And I didn't understand love the way I understand it now. You know, so how can I not be, and my fans have grown. They have evolved. If I've introduced them to King Zamar, I should trust that from those ideas, they would then take and grow with me. You know, it was a risk. Super risky, you know. I did not know if people would get it. I did not know if maybe I sang too much, because someone actually mentioned at the label that you really wrote a lot for this album. Like, you wrote, and there's a lot of singing involved. It's not just playing around anymore. And I was like, but we have to move forward. So even at the next project, which I already started working on, there's growth. Because remember, I believe in working from point A to point B, but in order for me to get from here to here, I need to walk this path. So I can't jump. So I can't wait and say, I'm going to wait until XYZ month to start working. It, from this point now, it's out. Let's move from this point. And whatever comes, you know, that's the result of the 900 songs, because it was like from King Zamar, where do we go from here? I need to plot this path properly.
My faves are Fat Girl, This Is Love, Destiny, and Freedom.
Yes.
Which songs speak to you? You can't say all 20. No.
It is all 20, but I will be, I'll humor you.
Thank you.
I love Fat Girl.
Really?
Yes, I think.
Why? Because I felt like it's a feminist anthem.
It is.
For me, I needed something to grasp onto in popular culture that speaks to the ideas that
bigger.
I have in my mind.
Yeah. Also. My problem is that people, South Africans and Africans, are holding on to Western ideology too much. You know? Kim Kardashian, they're holding on to Iggy Azalea. They're holding on to the skinny women, you know, Halle Berry and what's her name, Angelina Jolie, and
certain people, features, certain colors,
certain colors, and people are not embracing the fact that women, we get stretch marks, we get what's this thing, cellulite, and no one's body is perfect in Africa, you know, because Africans are not created to be like Western people. So this Western idea has told us that, okay, these guys are perfect, they're beautiful. Who's telling us here that we're beautiful? Now, the problem has come from the men now, where now the African man is so obsessed with the Western woman, they're not appreciating the African woman. Now you're calling me names, you are demoralizing me. I give you children, I give you life. Your mother has looks. She's big. Most
She's
African
big.
Mothers are big. Are you then saying that they're not beautiful? You know, are you trying to break me down from the age of 20, 15? You know, and I've had to suffer with that. And I've had to deal with that. And I always ask myself, what about women who are bigger than me? If I am struggling at this point, what about the women who have more? And sometimes it's not because you eat. It's because it's your genes.
Your
and
genetic
there's
makeup.
Thyroid problems. There's allergies that people are not aware of. And not everyone can afford to go to a dietitian and
or even a what specialist who will help you and give you meds to something.
Exactly. And these Herbex and what things are great, but they're not designed for every single human being, you know? So why are we breaking down ourselves? Why are we not, as women, speaking about it? Why are we not saying, you'll never find anyone like me. I might be big, but don't for a second think that because you're going to leave me for some skinny woman, that she's going to love you better than I can. You
I'm
understand?
Thinking now that in popular media, we have people like Busiswa, who is
yes.
the anti-everything.
She's everything you don't want in the general sense.
Exactly.
And but she's killing it.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, so if you can have an adoration of Busiswa, then surely you should understand that everything
look at Adele.
Exists on a spectrum.
Exactly. Look at Adele. Adele came in, and I remember how she was crucified for being fat. And I'm thinking to myself, so you guys are bashing her today on a Tuesday. What did you expect her to do on a Wednesday? So she must lose that weight, just
she
gone.
Let's go get liposuction.
You understand? Like, these things are dangerous. Even liposuction, they're not for everyone.
Extreme.
This thing of bleaching your skin, it's not for everyone.
Mm.
You understand? It can have terrible ramifications for your body, your genetic makeup. And I was just tired of people, women, when a guy says, oh, you're so fat, then it ruins your whole day.
It
and
does.
It's like, take it back, yo. Stop making your waist so small just so it can accommodate your bum. Because some of y'all, you're going to have spinal problems.
Back
because
up.
Now you are taking away the support that you're supposed to have because you want to have this hourglass body. And I was just, I wanted to be a big fat girl. And I wanted to rule this big fat world. And you will never find a love like mine. Because I believe that no African woman can love you. No woman outside of the African woman can love an African man more than an African woman.
Many would beg to differ, but I hear you. If
who's many?
Many.
Oh, many. I was
sorry.
Like, what?
Many would beg to
yeah,
beg
but
to
that's
differ.
Their problem.
That's
I'm opinion. Catering to the people that have this problem.
Mm.
Yeah.
If... And this is a very weird question to ask you, but if the success of Monarch does not mimic that of King Zuma, what would that mean to you?
Can I answer truthfully?
As honest as you can.
I don't think it's possible.
Tell me why.
Success is different.
Uh-huh.
Success is not just because one streamed better than the other.
That doesn't
does
make
not
the
mean
other
the other one. I'm very confident that Monarch will break barriers that King Zuma could not.
Mm.
I'm very confident that Monarch will spread a message further and wider than King Zuma did.
Mm.
I do not know about the numbers, but I must be confident that the numbers will reflect that in time. Maybe right now they might not want to buy into it as much as they did, because you're a new kid on the block at that time.
Mm.
And now there's the sophomore album and you're like, hee. But I have to believe that the reason why people loved King Zuma is because of my authenticity.
And that has not changed.
Exactly. So I don't think there will be a problem with success. The problem will then be how do we then define success?
We have a thing where we ask in the beginning, in our intro, we say we're going to ask these celebrities, these famous people, what's in their drawers, what's on their walls, and how they get their wows.
Their what?
Wow.
Oh, wow. Like a W-O-W.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so what's the
first
one?
What is in your bedside drawer? Do you have a bedside drawer?
Lingerie.
Okay.
Just a lot of lingerie.
When you sleep and you open your eyes in the morning, what's the first thing you see?
The ceiling.
Really?
Yeah.
No picture hanging on the wall?
No, I don't like pictures on the walls. Okay. Only in my dining room.
Why?
In my living room. Hey. Why must I have things hanging on the walls?
Because it's art and it's nice to have on your walls.
Yeah. Not in my bedroom.
Not in your bedroom?
No.
What gives you a wow feeling? What humbles you? What excites you? What makes you think that what you do is worth it?
When I have a moment to think, when I have a moment to just sit down and just take it all in, I feel like I'm unworthy of this position in my life all the time. Like, gee, this is me, for real. When I walk into certain arenas and people that I have admired are coming at me and saying, wow, what a great job.
Mm.
When people that, like, there's a particular author that I've loved forever, and when he said to me, what you're doing is great, I almost freaked out, like, what? You think I'm great? I think you're amazing, you know? Yeah, those are my wow moments.
What's next? You said, Jets, you've started working on your third album.
Yeah.
But what is next? Like, immediately. What does the picture now look like for you? No, the immediate picture is, it's unnecessary. We know, we can see where that is going. What is the bigger picture for you now?
I aspire to broaden the scope of, like, to really go further into dance music, explore different country type. Not country the music, like countries, like African countries.
Mm.
I'm kind of play around with their sounds a bit,
mm.
you know, and see what I can do with that.
Mm.
Almost introduce, you know, traveling, you realize that South Africa is really so unique. We have so much music here, but at the same time, our music is not reaching enough. So I want to take some from what they have and introduce it to here.
Mm.
By doing that, introduce myself to them.
Mm.
Yeah, and obviously touring. I want to stop. Let me talk about that. I want to start touring,
mm.
proper touring, concert touring.
Okay. What's yeah. different to what you've been doing?
Gigging is like you get booked.
And you go and you perform. You go, come back.
Yeah. Mm. But concerts, it's like there's the entire...
You have a schedule.
Stage.
You say, I'm going to X places over the next 4 weeks, and it's a whole production.
It's a whole production, from the band to the backup dancers to the singers to, you know, the visuals, the audio, everything. I want to tour more so that people can understand the work. Because if you book me for like 30 minutes or an hour, you will never get through my catalog.
Mm.
My catalog is so, so big. You know, so imagine 3 albums officially, 1 unofficial albums, and the many, many features I've done.
That's a lot.
Putting everything together. I want to give people a show that they can remember each and every city, as many countries as I possibly can.
And that is where we leave it with the monarch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us this week on Independent Lifestyles Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, iol.co.za/lifestyle, and follow us on iTunes and Spotify so you'll never miss a show.